So it's 6 o'clock and we will call our meeting to order and welcome everyone this evening. We have one regret, and that is from Councilor Thorburn Irvine, who may be able to log on later virtually. Our first item of business is the approval of the agenda for May 27th, 2026, and there are a couple of additions. Under 8B, Intermunicipal Service Agreement, 6-month extension. And under 9B, Senior Director of Housing, Infrastructure and Communities, response to request to expand eligible expenditures under the Canada Community Building Fund Advocacy Letter. If I can have a motion, please, to approve as amended.
Sorry, Warden. We'd also like to...
To switch the two, but we can do those in camera.
Okay, perfect. Yes.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Next is the acceptance of the minutes of May 13th, 2026. Are there any changes required to these minutes? If not, we will accept those as presented. Next item is business arising from the minutes. Anything to be brought before council from the last meeting? Hearing none, we'll move on to proclamations. The first is First Responders and Volunteers Day, May 27th, 2026. And today, of course, is the third anniversary of the Barrington Lake wildfire. Recognizing the anniversary of First Responders and Volunteers Day and honoring the community response to the Barrington Lake wildfire. Whereas on May 22nd, 2024, the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne issued a proclamation declaring May 27th as First Responders and Volunteers Day to recognize and honor the exceptional dedication, bravery, and service of those who answer the call in times of crisis. And whereas this date holds profound significance for our municipality, marking the anniversary of the Barrington Lake wildfire, the largest in Nova Scotia's history, which struck our region in May 2023, causing widespread devastation, evacuations, property loss, and hardship across our communities. And whereas our volunteer firefighters, community volunteers, and municipal staff responded with unwavering courage and compassion, working tirelessly to protect lives and property, providing critical support services, and helping guide our community and the victims of the fire through recovery in the months that followed. And whereas the response to the Barrington Lake wildfire stands as a powerful testament to the resilience, unity, and spirit of our community, neighbors helping neighbors, and volunteers stepping forward in extraordinary ways to meet extraordinary challenges. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne reaffirms May 27th as First Responders and Volunteers Day in recognition of the heroic contributions made during the Barrington Lake wildfire and in gratitude to all those who continue to serve our community with dedication and heart. Let this day serve as an enduring symbol of our appreciation and as a reminder of the strength we find in one another during our most difficult times. And I would ask Council to hold a moment of silence for Alexandru Uichita, the 40-year-old firefighter with the Bridgetown Volunteer Fire Department, who suffered a sudden medical emergency and passed away last week while helping battle a wildfire in Annapolis County. Our thoughts are with his family, friends, and the department at this difficult time. And I have passed along the municipality's condolences as well. Next item is the proclamation for Access Awareness Week. Whereas the week of May 31st to June 6th, 2026 is recognized as Access Awareness Week. And whereas Access Awareness Week aims to celebrate achievements made both by and for persons with disabilities in the areas of accessibility, transportation, housing, employment, recreation, education, and communication. And whereas this is the 40th year that this public awareness initiative has taken place in Nova Scotia. And whereas the theme for 2026, Access Awareness Week, is disability justice, stronger together, first voice leading collective action. And whereas accessibility barriers are many and interconnected, removing and preventing them is challenging and complex. And whereas the foundation of Nova Scotia's Accessibility Act is to provide, support, and protect the rights of persons with disabilities to full inclusion and accessibility by the identification, prevention, and removal of accessibility barriers. And whereas Access Awareness Week promotes the inclusion of all Nova Scotians with disabilities as full citizens within our communities. And whereas through public awareness, community partnerships, and education, this campaign aims to foster an environment of equal participation for persons with disabilities within the municipality of Shelburne. Therefore, be it resolved that I, Warden Penny Smith, on behalf of the municipality of the District of Shelburne, do hereby proclaim May 31st to June 6th, 2026 as Access Awareness Week. Moving on to public hearing number 6A, Municipal Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw Review. So first, I would like to welcome everyone to this public hearing regarding the amendments to the Municipality of Shelburne's Municipal Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw. And on behalf of Council, I thank you for your interest and participation in this important step in the planning process for our municipality. This public hearing has been advertised and convened in accordance with the requirements of the Municipal Government Act and all statutory obligations related to public participation, notice, and process have been fulfilled. The purpose of this public hearing is to provide an opportunity for the public to offer input on the proposed municipal planning strategy and land use bylaw documents prior to Council's final consideration of their adoption. And I believe that Brighter Planning is with us virtually, and so we will ask them to provide an overview of the amendments to the documents, please.
Certainly. Good evening, Council. Let me share my screen, please. Can you hear me all right?
We can.
It's been a while. It's nice to see you at least, Warden Smith. I can't see the rest of Council.
You as well.
So this has been a while coming. This is the final step in the process for your inclusionary and bonus density amendments to your recently adopted municipal planning strategy and land use bylaw. So what is inclusionary or bonus? And this is the public hearing, which is the opportunity for the public to give comments directly to you before you can consider second reading. So I can't tell if the room is full or if there's just a few people there, but I'll give a very brief presentation, unless you would like me to give a lengthy presentation where I go into more detail, and then we'll go on from there. So inclusionary or bonus density, it's essentially a way of they're tools to incent affordable housing through different ways. Essentially, bonus density is the ability to give extra units or provide additional flexibility in exchange for the developer providing affordable housing. Inclusionary zoning is again a different kind of incentive. They're linked. Often the requirements for inclusionary zoning would be that it's a certain amount would be affordable, and then you would bonus them through additional height provisions or reductions in parking. So the two, the way we've structured these, are linked. So the inclusionary zoning is really about providing encouraging affordable housing through some of the bonusing provisions. So it's a tool that was basically came out of the United States, and it's become very considered in some municipal units. It's more of an urban tool, honestly, than it is a tool used in more rural places. And the issue isn't really urban or rural. It's more about pressures of the market and developers wanting to have additional bonus provisions in exchange they give the affordable housing commitments. So you at your first reading would have received the package of amendments. Essentially, there are just a few policy changes that talk about the affordable housing inside the suburban designation by development agreement. And again, it is in exchange for bonusing. So things like increased height of buildings or decreases in parking. This is linked to your Housing Accelerator Fund process. So part of that commitment that you made when you received that money is you would consider inclusionary and bonus zoning. So this helps fulfill that requirement. So based on your current planning policies, we're proposing the bonusing include things like reduction in parking requirements, the increase in lot coverage percentage, the permitted increasing height and potential for payment rather than constructing the affordable units. So for example, Halifax did this. Sometimes they were unable to secure a local housing provider that could guarantee that the housing units would be affordable, so that there was a fee that was paid to the municipality that went into a fund specifically for affordable housing. And so they didn't provide the housing, they provide funds which would allow the housing to be constructed. So this is just help you to kind of think about what a bonus density would look like. So this is a 3-unit and the bonus height in exchange for additional height would be in exchange for those housing, affordable housing units, as we've discussed. So the proposal in front of you is that it would only happen in the suburban designation, that it would involve parking height, lot coverage, and amenity space. It would be voluntary. So you can make this a requirement to have certain amount of affordable housing in certain circumstances. However, you have to have a really robust market to do that, to really force developers to do it. You don't want to drive developers away. You want to work with the development and community to get these affordable housing units. And then we also need to determine how we what we consider affordable. And so we have included in the amendments what they would affordable would look like. It's important to understand that inclusionary zoning does come with some administrative requirements if you get any. So you have to ensure that your affordable units stay in the affordable market for a certain period of time. And if you have money, that you have to manage the money, and that would fall to your finance department. Especially if there's cash in lieu, as I mentioned. So we're going to add a few new sections to your bylaw as the amendments that have been circulated describe. We'll have new sections on bonusing, and then we need to just make some changes to your land use bylaw. They're not huge changes, they're just minor changes, but the impact is to create this bonusing and inclusionary zoning requirements. So the warden spoke about the process. We've had a public information meeting. We did the adjacent municipal notifications. Council gave first reading to the proposed amendments on April 22nd. And tonight we're doing the public hearing, and council then would consider second reading. After second reading, if council gave second reading, it would go off to the minister for their review, similar to what happened with your MPS and LUB amendment. Or LUB when you adopted them, and then they would come into force once the minister approved them, and then they were the notification went out in the newspaper. So At this point, that's my presentation, and I'm not aware of any submissions from the public, but I defer to Nicole on that if there's any submissions that have been circulated.
Okay, thank you very much for that, and I do not believe that we had received any submissions from the public. So we do need a motion to go to enter public hearing, if someone would like to make that, please.
Motion, we go in public hearing.
Thank you. Is there a seconder?
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. And are there any members of the public who wish to speak to this matter this evening, either in person or online? Hearing none. Whether you're here to speak or just to learn more or listen, we appreciate your attendance and your contribution to this process. So we will now need a motion to exit public hearing.
I so move.
Thank you. And a seconder, please. Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Okay, so we will now move on to economic and community development. And our first item is municipal planning strategy and land use bylaw. Second reading, and that's Ms. Kane. Welcome this evening.
Thank you, Warden. Further to Crystal Fuller's presentation and subsequent to public hearing, I now ask that council consider the recommendation to give second and final reading to the proposed amendments to the municipal planning strategy and land use bylaw to establish affordable housing bonusing within the suburban designation.
Okay, thank you. Would someone like to make that prepared motion, please? Deputy Warden.
Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne gives second and final reading to the proposed amendments to the municipal planning strategy and land use bylaw to establish affordable housing bonusing within the suburban designation.
Thank you. Is there a seconder, please?
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Excuse me. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Mm-hmm. Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you very much, Crystal, for all of your work on this file and staff as well.
Thank you.
And have a wonderful evening. Next item under 7 is speed radar signs, Woodlawn Drive, and that's Ms. Smith. And welcome.
Good evening. The purpose of this report is to give an update regarding the pedestrian safety at the crosswalk just up here on the hill. So it's been ongoing for a few years. I believe this kind of fell on me in November of 2023. So we're going on almost 3 years when there had been continued concerns from staff, council, yourselves, and residents of safety. So we'd put out a request in 2023 to TIR, Department of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal, for them to consider putting the flashing beacon lights, which are the rectangular rapid flash beacons, RRFBs. So at that time, they told us that a traffic count was needed, and we didn't get that traffic count done until January of 2025. So following that, they advised us that TR was never in the original installation of that crosswalk, and actually that how it's set up now isn't even an approved setup. So it doesn't meet the standards, and they advised us that some corrective measures would be made to how it is right now to change it. The X markings don't comply, and a few other things with provincial standards. So from the assessment that they did, they came back to us and told us that the daily traffic count that's needed to go through there to consider those flashing beacons is 2,400 vehicles. And the count came back at 12,000 vehicles per day. So we weren't even close to being able to be considered until that volume went up. So myself and the warden and the CAO, and I think Val too, we met with some of the TIR and the traffic authority people to talk about some options and things. So given the concerns from council and staff and residents, what we're recommending is to look at some other options, which is the solar powered speed radar signs that many of you might have seen in places. And there's a few different options, which you'll see are all included here. And they do different things showing, you know, what the speed is or if you should slow down, like different. Yeah, so we can look at a few of those. When I talked with the company, the one thing that they did tell me was that option three, which is listed, is the one that's used within the Halifax Regional Municipality. So that is a really widely used one. The other thing to note with this is the school zone does impact both of our municipal jurisdictions. So what we're recommending is that if you go ahead with this, that we also then let the town of Shelburne know that we've put one up on this end of it and for them to consider one on the Hillcrest end as you enter the school zone on that way. The other thing that we've talked about too is communicating more with the RCMP to be out there for more traffic, you know, watching the speeds and stuff. Getting more information in our newsletter, talking with the school about educating the kids a little bit more because they are crossing that crosswalk, just not even looking. So, so yeah, you can take a look at some of the costs and have some discussions and.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that. So, and thank you for the options that presented as well. So I'm wondering just, I guess based on what you would consider the needs for that area, mm-hmm. what would be your recommendation?
I mean, to me, when I look at these options, and I don't know, but anyways, there's not a whole lot of difference in price no. between any of them at all. No. So the one with the option four does have that slow down sign. But to me, when I think of that, is that it's only a 30 zone when there's kids walking on the side of the streets. So if you put that slow down message has to come when people are going 30, well, they don't have to go 30 on the weekends when there's no kids in the school zone. So I don't know if the slowdown option would be, I mean, the option three is the one that, you know, is the most widely used from what they've told me. So the other thing I guess to consider, because these weren't budgeted items. Yeah. So for your discussion, whether it's something that you'd like to look at now for this year or for the next budget as well.
And are these are portable?
No, I don't believe. I think they're attached to something. Cool. And then they're solar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Solar I like.
Yes. For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Really when you're looking at it, I think it's only
the
different options
on
the health and safety of our children and residents, so I'm hoping that's not going to be deciding factor in this situation. But I am interested to know whether or not it is something that and I guess, you know, for that area perhaps it isn't something that we'd want to remove, that it's something that we'd want to keep, whereas if we were looking at using something like this to go in various locations
right.
throughout the municipality based on the need, I guess that's something that's a different discussion. Okay. So I'm going to start with Councillor Richardson and then Deputy Warden, Mr. Stand.
My concern is the effectiveness of those in the location. Where do we post it? If we post it at the start of what's considered the school zone, it's forgotten long before they get to the crosswalk.
Mm-hmm.
If you go the other side, it may be possible. To your point about, I think one of these units can be made mobile. In other words, you can make up, as long as it has a stand, it can be moved from one location to another, it locks on. But that being said, I think, to me, what would make the most common sense is the crossing is similar that is down at the main intersection by the restaurant.
Yeah.
The flashing light, because it's a crosswalk. And if it's the funding part, I would rather us consider funding something like that than putting something that I don't think would be as effective. I'm not saying that they wouldn't slow down at the sign and then it looked, to your point, after hours, it's not relevant. Well, and it's always a question out of the school year, it's not relevant. Where if we put a flashing cross, you know, pedestrian sign in there, it would be effective all year, which I think is an applying crest, but.
Yeah, I'll ask Ms. Smith to respond, but just quickly, it's not just for the school use. It's for people coming from Spa Road and.
Community use too.
And not just school hours.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Counselor Richardson, what they found from this study, and I think I said my numbers wrong here the last time, was that it's required to have 12,000 vehicles a day. They put out a test. We only have 2,400 vehicles a day crossing, so we can't possibly put up those flashing beacons.
Even if we
pay for it, that's what we met with them about, and even if we were to pay for it. So the example in the town of Shelburne is they are their own traffic authority, and this is provincial jurisdiction. So the other thing that we did discuss when we met with them was moving that crosswalk up into the town's jurisdiction and discussing with them if we could then, you know, put that flashing beacon there. But it also then creates some other problems with the sidewalk having to be extended. The Shelburne town sign is there, you know, so there was those things that we talked about. So. Yeah, so this is the solution that we think is the best at this time to increase safety.
God forbid.
Yeah, I think we were in agreement with Counselor Richardson, if you could put those lights there.
Yeah.
You know, that could be the solution, but.
I guess it makes too much sense.
Yeah, the province did state very clearly to us, and Deputy Warden had attended the meetings as well, that they wouldn't allow that.
No.
Even if we were to pay for it.
But even to Counselor Richardson's comment and Robin stating that moving the sidewalk up, our problem that we discussed was that coming from this way, when say broke the hill, and if a child was in or a resident was in that sidewalk, there's no distance before. We'd have to put it so far down the road that we'd be creating another sidewalk and that sort of thing. I'm one of the ones that brought it forward because of the calls that I would get from residents and the viewing of a child almost getting hit in that crosswalk one day on their way to work. It's scary because I thought for sure they had got them. And, you know, the driver as well as the child who was on their phone wasn't paying attention either. But we need to get our drivers to slow down. I like the options. I would much rather see the 15-inch display. We need it big right now. We need people to be aware, and we need it before the crosswalk, not entering the school zone. We need it right there. That's where the kids and the residents are crossing. And we have the kids that's going there during the summer to play in the field. We have programs going on. And my understanding, these ones that we're seeing here are not mobile. They will be affixed to a pole that's in the ground, cemented in. And I see it's got a 2-year warranty onto it when I read that. And that's good as well. And I think it comes to our responsibility to put those poles in. So it'll be an extra cost above what the sign is here. I'm in full support because I think we need it before we're faced with a fatality there of either a resident or a child. So.
So which option are you suggesting, Deputy Warden?
Well, I like, and it doesn't say that option 5 has the slowdown. If either 4 or 5, I think we need the bigger display.
Okay, thank you for that. Counselor Shan, did you still wish to speak? Counselor Sutherland?
I'm kind of in favor of option 5 because it has the ability to display multiple customizable messages, which you could put slow down. Or if there's like a, what I'm thinking of is a sports thing going on weekend. that is the high school, and there are sports events that do go on. So safety's got to be the number one priority.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, any other questions or comments or suggestions, Councillor Richardson?
No, I'm, you know, given the choice, I would rather voice that. And obvious, it's not the choice. I also would go with the option five. The more you can enhance it, whether it be flashing or anything else. And also, if my memory serves me, they can count the speeders, and you get stats off of those, on some of those. I reviewed them and I can't remember which was which, but it would be nice to know how many are paying attention. That would be useful also of the RCMP.
And I think, Ms. Smith, that the comments that you made about, you know, the awareness and education, and, you know, I think that's part of this.
Yeah.
As well, you know, it's one thing to put the infrastructure in place, but there's more to it than just that.
Yeah.
So talking in the school with
the school
and things is important too.
And the other thing I was thinking too is with that, we can try to get a little bit more information about, because my only thing is that 30 and 50 when school's in and school's not. So how do you put what the, you know, is there a setting you can go in there and change the times, you know, from 9 till 3, that it should be 30 when there's a student present, you know, that kind of thing, that we can try to get a little bit more information on that option five.
Okay, so I think it's the consensus around the table that we explore option five and the additional costs related to the mounting, or I'm not sure if that's exactly what it's called, but the additional costs involved with installing it.
Yeah.
And we'll look forward to a staff report.
At that point, it might turn over to Marcia, because it will become a project. Sure. So I will definitely get the information and stuff, but as far as the project and installation, it will go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Appreciate you bringing it to council. Yep. Thank you.
Welcome.
All right, moving on to the next item, which is the phase one environmental assessment and hazmat survey, and that's Ms. Kane again.
Council. So after much discussion at the Economic Growth Committee table, it was decided that with council's overall objective of moving forward with some type of cleanup at the old boys school site, that in phase one environmental assessment and hazmat survey was going to be necessary. So we currently have kind of two legislative processes on the go right now, or we're waiting in a redemption period on potential ownership by the municipality, and also a demolition order that was signed by the warden. So regardless of which of those legislative processes you choose or are going to have the authority to follow, this hazmat and environmental assessment will be necessary with that overall objective. So we do have RV Anderson under contract doing some infrastructure work in that, on that site. So we have asked, we asked them to increase that scope of work, or add an additional scope of work to complete this survey and assessment. So the cost came back at $13,750 plus tax. And the staff report does outline the type of work that will be done and included. So this is a recommendation from the May 12th Economic Growth Committee, where the motion was passed to recommend to council to proceed with this phase one environmental assessment and hazardous materials survey as outlined.
Okay, thank you for that. There is a prepared motion. If someone would like to make that, please. Councillor Richardson.
Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne authorizes staff to proceed with phase one environmental site assessment and hazardous material survey for PID 80101587, the former boys' school property at a cost of $13,750 plus applicable taxes as outlined.
Okay, thank you for that.
Can I make one slight addition to that? Funds to come from the Canada Community Building Fund.
From the Canada Community Building Fund? Okay, and Counselor Richardson, you're okay with that inclusion? Great, thank you. And a seconder? Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on this motion? Counselor Shand?
I'm just curious, because maybe it's from before I started. So we're going ahead and doing an environmental assessment and we don't actually own the property yet? So if we don't get the property, we're at a loss of the $13,000? No?
No, Ms. Kane?
So we have two legislative authoritative processes going on right now. So in January of 2026, the warden did sign a demolition order through the dangerous and unsightly process. So that is one process that we could follow if council's overall goal is to remediate site. Subsequent to that, when it was discovered to be on tax sale, a motion was passed for the municipality to place a tender bid on that property. And we were successful in securing that property, but there is a 6-month redemption period. So if that lapses and the municipality becomes the owner, then we would clean it up through our own ownership, through funding that's available to us. So either way, if the overall goal is to remediate, the survey will need to be done regardless of who the owner is.
But if I may, Counselor Shand, is your question that if we don't own it, why would we pay that cost? Why wouldn't that cost be borne by the property owner? I think is perhaps what you meant by that.
Yep, so that is a valid point. It isn't a recoverable cost under the tax sale redemption either. So either of those processes, this would be a cost bearer by the municipality under the use of their Canada Community Building Fund.
Okay. Does that clarify a bit more for you, Counselor Shand?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Well, yes, I understand what you're saying, but I guess it's just, we're going to spend that money for a project that we may not get. So then we're completing that for somebody else to own it out of our pocket. It's that either route that we take, it's the cost is still on us to do it, right? So if we don't get that piece of property.
Ms. Kane?
Actually, if you follow the dangerous and unsightly process, it becomes part of, it becomes applicable to their tax account. So it's recoverable through the tax account. If we own it is when it's not going to be recoverable.
Yes, which is totally, I mean, if we get that obviously it needs to happen and makes sense to spend the money to do so. I was just thinking about if we didn't and we spent the money, how that could be recouped. So that makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, so it will be recoverable, that cost, if it does stay with the property owner. Nicole?
The CAO had his hand up.
Okay, go ahead, CAO.
Yeah, I think that question was just answered there by Val. It is recoverable because it becomes a lien on the property. If the property owner does redeem the property and own it, we have an obligation to look at remediating that site anyway. So we have to put that money into that environmental assessment ahead of time, and that becomes a lien on the property going forward.
Thank you for that. I think we're trying to be proactive and to get it done ahead of time instead of waiting for after the redemption or whatever the case may have, whatever happens in a couple of months from now. Okay. Does that answer your questions, Counselor Shand? Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Any other questions or comments regarding this motion? If not, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you for that. Next item is, we're into 8A, Waste Diversion Officer Quarterly Report. And I believe Ms. Dion is going to present that this evening. So welcome.
Good evening. Our waste diversion officer is not available today, so I'm going to present this on her behalf. Essentially, this is a quarterly report to update council on the various activities that have been taking place in relation to waste. Waste in all of its, in all capacities. So she's kind of broke it down into the various activities that have been taking place, and I'll just give a quick summary. Her and I both will be attending the SWANA conference the first week of June. It is a really good chance to network with the various waste experts and professionals that are in Nova Scotia and to learn about the challenges that are facing us and, you know, find out the tips and tricks. So kind of excited about that. Curbside collection. We get a significant amount of calls on a daily basis, and our waste diversion officer fields those calls and provides education to residents to make sure that they are sorting their waste properly, that they're receiving instructions on where to bring their waste. Waste is complicated, like I say, quite often. Not everything goes in a bag. There's various facilities available, and our waste diversion officer is always available to answer those questions and to provide some instructions and education around the process. So you all know that we started with EPR, which is the contract that we have with Circular Materials. This is a provincially mandated program that came into effect December 1st, 2025, and we are an opt-in community, which means we opted into their program, meaning that we still manage it, but we follow their rules. The program's been going well overall. However, there are a few items that are depot eligible that we do not have a depot in our area currently that we're aware of. We think that there's a potential for that to change, and we hope there's some news on that front right now, but for now it is business as usual for those items. Residents can choose to bring materials such as styrofoam. They can drive it to a depot in Yarmouth or Bridgewater, or they can continue to put it curbside as they do. Danielle's always available again to instruct you on what to do with your waste. Recently, the spring metal cleanup was completed. It went off without a hitch, and according to our site weigh-ins, we collected just under 30,000 pounds of metal. Green carts were a topic of conversation at a council meeting in May. You'll be seeing a future staff report within the next meeting or two about a new internal policy for green carts. So I'll leave that one for the future. Household hazardous waste. There were a few items identified in an occupational health and safety report. They've now been addressed. We also, as a project approved in this fiscal year, were approved to have a C-can for storage purposes, and the C-can quotes have been requested, and we're just waiting for the preparation work at the site to be completed before we can complete that project. We're excited to have some additional storage space and ability to expand that program. Battery recycling. The waste diversion officer attended, and I apologize, I have an eye injury and I'm struggling to read this right now. I can't quite see it, but I also can't take my glasses off, so sorry.
You're doing great.
Went fuzzy for a minute. So she attended a call to recycle program training and had some additional information on how to process batteries in our area. There is a new pilot program, and we're hoping that that's something that we're able to participate in. I should mention on this section that we are collecting a significant number of vaping products, and currently there is no recycling solution for those, but they are contributing significantly to material that's collected. So that's something that we're hoping that's addressed in the SWANA conference when we go in June, because we know that other units are reporting that they are also receiving a significant amount of vape products. We have a light recycling program that we shipped out a shipment of lights in March. the litter incentive program. 28 kilometers have been completed to date, and I believe that all kilometers have already been spoken for and should be completed in the next few weeks. Earth Day 2026 looked a little bit different this year. In the past, the municipality has done a compost pickup at the C&D site. Due to the timing of the operational changes and the site closure and the timing of Earth Day, we did something a little bit different this year and encouraged municipal staff to participate in a community cleanup, and staff and councillors went out on the sidewalk here and on the local area within the municipality and picked up in the vicinity of the municipal administration building. So, and we were really happy that everyone volunteered their time for that. Our waste diversion coordinator also attended and participated in an Earth Day information session together with our Region 6 educator. And she felt like that was a very informative discussion and was well received by the people that attended. And there is some plans underway to host an additional session at the Shelburne Community Center later this summer. So that's a plan for the future. And as I indicated, the RMRF transfer station, we are operating under the new model. Everything seems to be going well. And the process was overall smooth, and the waste diversion coordinator assisted with helping that happen and making sure that it got advertised to the public and fielding any phone calls that came through, you know, to us here at the Emin building. That's the update in terms of the waste diversion coordinator.
Thank you very much for that report, and to our waste diversion coordinator. You mentioned the just over 29,000 pounds of metals collected. Is that, would that be an average spring?
It's very similar to our regular cleanup.
Oh my gosh, yes. That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it does. But it's been a successful program, and I think that because it's been a long running program, that it's something that we get a lot of buy-in. And you know, that contributes to its success. When something can become a habit is when you see people really use the service.
Yeah, I think residents really appreciate that it's an annual event. And
right.
Yeah. And just before Councillor Richardson, you mentioned about different items that perhaps our residents, we don't have a depot for a yes. various number of items, I guess, that people are looking for. So what type of items?
Right. So with the changes to EPR that took place in December, our recycling program has been in place for almost 20 years within Nova Scotia, the mandated recycling program.
Yeah.
But they changed just a small few items that previously used to be considered garbage that are now eligible for recycling, but only at depots. Mm-hmm. And those include some single use plastics such as chip bags, Kit Kat wrappers, wash saran wrap, and styrofoam being the big one.
Okay.
And so if you choose to, you can collect those items and you can drive them to a depot in order to dispose of them.
Okay.
For areas that do not have a depot within a reasonable driving distance, we essentially encourage people to continue to process those curbside the same way you always have. You can bag them up and place them curbside. They will still be collected.
Okay.
Currently, they do not get considered as a contaminant. They do not sort of impact us in a negative way.
Okay.
However, they are eligible for recycling through the depot program, and we do encourage people to comply if possible, but we understand without a local depot option that is very difficult.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. Councillor Richardson.
Yeah, I don't really have any questions. It seems like that changeover has gone well. The only thing I'm noticing is several residents making journeys to the C&D site, not paying attention to the change. And so I think I called the deputy CAO about it, and possibly with the onslaught of summer residents that aren't aware of possibly the changes, that we periodically do a Facebook notice on that, which I see there was one put in recently, but it may be a good thing to be ongoing for the next month or so.
Yeah, so in relation to the phone call that you made, we did put a post out, we did share it. We have also, we've updated the signage at the site, and we had done some radio advertising that's considerably expensive, but we had done some around the time of the closure and the reopening. And one of the things we did discover just within the last week or two is that a Google search, Google itself, was advertising our hours wrong. Our website was updated. Our signage was updated, our Facebook was updated, but Google itself was giving our old hours. So we did notify them and ask them to change it, and that's been done. So that might help as well.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
Excellent. Thank you for that. And it's always great to see the last comment in the report being progress continues across multiple waste management and operational areas. So I think we are moving in the right direction.
I think that overall, Danielle's, if she was standing here in front of you today, I think overall she'd say she thinks it's going well.
The only comment that I think it's going great. I've heard great comments, but one of the residents have brought forth that, and I know it's not in our budget this year, but to consider in our next budget round, a digital sign down at our C&D site. So even if they're not open, we have information displaying out by the fence. I know it's on the fence and we have different things, but if it's flashing and it's bigger and people are seeing it, even displaying our hours and, you know, the separation, that sort of thing, it'd be something to consider in our next budget rounds to think about.
So are you thinking almost like when you walk the way we used to do it at Tim Hortons and there was this line and you'd be waiting
exactly
for your order, you'd see all kinds of messages there, like announcements and things? Is that what you're thinking?
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, great. Something to explore.
Yeah. Councilor Shand.
I have a question, but maybe it's something that needs to wait until we revisit the green cart again, but just noticing that it's noted like in her report that there was a total of 94 carts distributed like since this year. Just wondering how she tracks that, because one of the things that we have brought up with the green cart was a way of being able to track as they're given out rather than just go with the standard. If it's broken, you bring it back and change it. I'm just curious how she's tracking.
We've always tracked the green carts going out. So we have a green cart request form. So anyone that requests a green cart, regardless of whether it's, you know, in the past paid for or not paid for, they have to fill out a green cart request form before one's released from the inventory. Right. Yeah, so we can count the green cart request forms in order to track that.
I'm wondering about that tracking system was a way to incorporate that into what we were talking about.
Okay, thank you for that. Any other questions or comments on this report? Hearing none, thank you. We'll move on to 8B. And that's the intermunicipal service agreement 6-month extension. Ms. Dion.
So the municipality of Shelburne met with our intermunicipal service partners, and we collectively call them shared services partners. We had a shared services meeting last week to go over all the variety of services that fall within this intermunicipal service agreement. And one of the items on the agenda was the fact that this agreement expires in July and needs to be updated. One of the reasons it needs to be updated is because of the changes at the RMRF site. So the agreement needs to be updated to reflect those changes, amongst other things. So at that meeting, we had a discussion and all of the parties identified several clauses and items that they would like to revisit and renegotiate. And given the tight timeline prior to the expiry, they've said they don't believe that we'll be able to come up with a revised agreement in time prior to the expiry, plus bring it to councils for approval. So they've asked to just extend the current agreement under the current terms for 6 months while we continue to explore. And essentially, there's no immediate financial implications of this. The budget as passed reflected business as usual under this contract. So there's no financial implications to granting the extension. Any future financial impacts would form part of the next budget season and would only be known once the terms of the contract were discussed and agreed to, if any. And essentially, we've we've made a prepared motion. I know that Lockport brought this before their council. I don't know yet if the town of Shelburne did. But Lockport brought it before their council last week. And yeah, there's a motion to extend the agreement for 6 months to January 8, 2027.
Okay, thank you for that. Someone like to make that prepared motion? Counselor Shan?
Be resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne approve a 6-month extension of the current intermunicipal service agreement from July 8, 2026 to January 8, 2027 to allow additional time for participating municipal units to review the agreement and explore potential amendments.
Thank you. Is there a seconder, please?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you very much. And I hope your eye heals. Next is correspondence. First item is Minister of Emergency Management Re-Municipal Fire Service Requirements Notice for information. Note in there that it talks about the need for fire services being reviewed, which is something that Jim is care of for us right now. Any questions or comments on that letter from the minister? Dane, I think we're moving in the right direction, the municipality, with what the province has stated that what we're going to be seeing in the next couple of years, I guess, in this transition period. Councillor Richardson?
The one thing I have a bit of concern on, I fully support what they're doing mm-hmm. and the direction they're going in. I haven't seen a lot of discussion about the dispatch service. Hopefully they will pay a lot more attention. I know in past there had been discussion through the firefighters or fire association of province about that, but it's an essential part, and I believe they really need a central dispatch for the whole province.
Okay, thank you for that comment. Any other comments or questions regarding the letter? Hearing none, we'll move on to 9B, and that is a letter that we received regarding or from the Senior Director of Housing, Infrastructure and Communities regarding expanding eligible expenditures under the Canada Community Building Fund. Yes. So we tried. they politely told us no, but I think there are a number of projects that do fit within that fund. So any questions or comments on that item? Hearing none, we will move on to committee reports and warden update 10A. Any committee reports to discuss at this point? Okay, we'll move on to warden's update. And actually a couple of councillors did attend with me on these. On April 21st, the deputy warden, community coordinator, and I joined healthcare professionals in the Shelburne County area for a paint night at the Shelburne Fire Hall. And there were approximately 70 that attended. And it was a really fun, relaxing evening. And there were a number of them that expressed their appreciation to us for making them feel valued and appreciated, not just that evening, but throughout the year. So that it was a really nice time to get together. On April 22nd, I attended the May that I should be saying here, not April. I attended the State of the Region event in Yarmouth. And there was a panel that consisted of the mayor of the town of Yarmouth, the wardens for the municipality of Yarmouth and Argyle, the MLA, Nick Hilton, Minister Colton LeBlanc was there, as well as the MP for the area, Christy Entremont, and our fisheries minister, Joanne Thompson. So there were specific questions for all of them to respond to, as well as questions from the audience. And the questions pertain to economic development, municipal modernization, the fisheries. They discussed short-term priorities and the need for collaboration among all three levels of government, as well as other topics. It was quite interesting and an opportunity for the local businesses that did attend to have informal chats with their representatives. And that afternoon, I attended the Regional Emergency Management Organization Advisory Committee meeting, and we talked about a mobile command unit, roles and responsibilities with the incident command system, the REMO bylaw, communications equipment, and I believe there may have been one or two other items for discussion. But we do plan to meet the third Thursday of each month through to December and reassess the meeting schedule at that time. I believe at one point that they were considering, or we were considering, quarterly meetings. But because, you know, this is a new committee, the desire was to meet monthly. And then this morning, the deputy warden, CAO, and I met with the town of Shelburne and seed representative and talked about potential water supply options. And we've invited the water operator, and I'm not sure of his title, whether it's just water operator or not, to present to council in June regarding the potential bulk water project. And the Saturday is going to be a very full day, but really wonderful events happening. At 11 in the morning, there will be a pride parade followed by the Spring Youth Makers Market at Our House Youth Wellness Center. At 1 p.m. will be the launch of the African Nova Scotian Seafaring Project at the Black Loyalist Heritage Center. And beginning at 2 p.m. until, I believe, 5:30 is the Welcome Neighbors event happening at SRHS. So lots of wonderful events and celebrations happening this Saturday, and all that are very important to our community. Okay, it is now 7:01. If I could have a motion, please, to go in camera.
Move it.
Thank you. Is there a seconder?
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Okay, so if we can have a motion to go out of in camera, please. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. We're now back into our public session, regular council meeting. It is 7:23 p.m. and we shall adjourn our meeting. Thank you, everyone.